This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 159 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. After months of over-analysis and back-and-forth debates, we've made it. We're here. It's week one, and your boy could not be more excited. For those of you who are new to the podcast, first off, welcome. If you can't tell, I like to move fast with this thing so you guys can get the most amount of information in the shortest amount of time. During the season, I'll be doing three shows per week. You've got this one that will drop each Tuesday, which goes over my 15 transactions column that's on numberfire.com. That column and this particular podcast is basically a strategic brain vomit of how I'm managing players in fantasy football. It gives you a long-term look rather than the weekly short-term ones that you'll see from a start-sit column or something similar. On this show, I also give a 16th transaction each week because you loyal listeners deserve a little bit more. Each Thursday, then, I'll be doing a matchup show. For those of you who listened to the podcast last season, you might remember that that episode was a start-sit show. I'm replacing that column on NumberFire with a new one called The Report, which is a giant data dump where I analyze interesting matchups for the upcoming week. So Thursday's matchup show will be me talking through a ton of different players that I like and that I dislike in that given week. And then Friday's the mailbag show. If you ever have questions for that mailbag show, you can find me on Twitter at LateRoundQB and send them there. I try to shy away from start-sit questions on that show and talk more about roster management and game theory. But that's it. Three podcasts per week, which include this 15 transaction show, a matchup show, and a mailbag show. It's going to be a hell of a season. Before we get going with today's transactions, I wanted to let you guys know about NumberFire Premium. With award-winning daily fantasy football tools, survivor pool picks, gambling predictions, and premium content from our top experts, NumberFire Premium has everything you need to dominate in 2018. Best of all, late-round podcast listeners get their first month of any level of premium access for just $9.99 with the promo code CHAMPION. For more, visit numberfire.com/premium. That's numberfire.com/premium. Sell LeSean McCoy. Trust me, you guys, I recognize the importance of volume in fantasy football. Volume is absolutely everything, especially at the running back position. And LeSean McCoy is going to see a lot of volume in an offense without a lot of playmakers this year. But I'm still a little nervous about owning him. The Bills' offense could and probably will be one that's going to struggle this year. And that's a big deal. I've talked about this statistic on this podcast before, but of the top 50 running back seasons in fantasy football during the last 5 years, the average number of touchdowns scored in those runners' respective offenses has been about 42. The NFL league average during this time has been 36.9. And let's be honest, the Bills could end up scoring closer to 30, which will lower the probability of LeSean McCoy being a top 10 running back. You're not drafting him as a top 10 running back, but you're limiting his overall upside. You would want more out of a third round fantasy football pick. But the biggest reason that you might want to sell LeSean McCoy right now is his schedule. Your goal in fantasy football is to have as much value as possible. You don't want to draft a guy and see his value drop after week one and week two. And in McCoy's case, I'm afraid that his value is going to drop right away. Because in week one, the Bills get a tough Ravens defense in Baltimore. Week two, they get the Chargers, who own one of the most talented defenses in the league. And then the following week, they might get the best defense in the league in Minnesota. Even in weeks 4, 5, and 6, they don't have easy matchups against the Packers, Titans, and Texans. And not only that, but the Bills have a bottom-tiered offensive line now. This is the worst offensive line that LeSean McCoy has been behind in Buffalo. And then I haven't even talked about his off-the-field issues. So basically, there's a good chance that your league and even you are viewing LeSean McCoy a lot differently when we hit week 7 than you are right now in week 1. And as a result, he's a sell candidate. Buy Emmanuel Sanders. So Sanders has played about 24% of his snaps from the slot in Denver over the last 3 seasons. And that's all according to Pro Football Focus. But during the preseason, that number has jumped to 64%. And that shift could be really big for Manny Sanders here in 2018. Remember last year, Adam Thielen dominated in Minnesota with Case Keenum while playing in the slot. The Vikings were 8th in the NFL in slot receiving yards in 2017. And now Case Keenum is in Denver. You know, Emmanuel Sanders has averaged 8.57 targets per game over the last 4 seasons. So regardless of where he's lined up in the field, he's going to see volume. But if he's in that slot position, which it seems like he's going to be, he could really thrive in 2018. add Alfred Morris and Matt Breida. So as it stands, Alfred Morris and Matt Breida are owned in over 50% of ESPN.com leagues. And that's a good thing because that means that fantasy owners are paying attention and realize that Jerick McKinnon tore his ACL. I'm bringing them up on today's podcast because I don't want people yelling at me for not talking about Matt Breida and Alfred Morris. But it's a good situation in San Francisco. When Jimmy Garoppolo was under center last year, the 49ers were first in yards per drive and first in scores per drive. And as a group, even with questionable quarterback play throughout last season, San Francisco running backs finished 14th in PPR scoring last year. The real question is how these two running backs are going to be used. And realistically, they do complement each other well. Alfred Morris has never been much of a pass catcher. In fact, he's run the ball 1,262 times across his career, and he has only 57 receptions. Since Alfred Morris entered the league in 2012, he's one of 11 players with 1,000 or more attempts. He ranks dead last in that group among receptions, and the player that's ranked 10th, one ahead of him, that's Adrian Peterson. He has fewer attempts during that span than Alfred Morris, but 58 more receptions. Alfred Morris is not going to play a receiving role on this team. Breida ranked 9th in reception success rate last year, which is the percentage of catches that went for positive expected point gains, among the 59 running backs with 20 or more catches. And he was actually really good in his change of pace role on the ground as well, finishing the season with by far the highest rushing efficiency rating for the 49ers, according to NumberFire's metrics. So here's the deal, in a PPR format, I'm a believer that you should be prioritizing Matt Breida over Alfred Morris. I'm projecting Alfred Morris to see more early down work and probably see some goal line looks or more goal line looks than Matt Breida, but Matt Breida is going to be on the field on passing downs and he's going to catch more passes than Alfred Morris. And targets are way more important than attempts at the running back position in fantasy football, especially in PPR formats. And I also think that overall, Matt Breida just has more upside than Alfred Morris does. Both running backs should be added everywhere, but I do prefer Breida in PPR formats. Sell Mark Ingram. So there's obviously a lot of fantasy football upside with Mark Ingram. We saw what he did last year in New Orleans. But I've been a little bit confused as to why his ADP was in the late fourth or in the fifth round this offseason. He's suspended for the first four games of the season, so at the very least, you're going to be holding on to Mark Ingram for 4 weeks during the hottest waiver wire period of the season. But then look at the New Orleans Saints schedule. When Mark Ingram returns in week five, they get Washington, so sure, he might have a good matchup there. But then they've got a bye in week six, and then week seven and week eight feature contests on the road against a tough Baltimore and Minnesota defense. It's honestly possible that through the first 8 weeks of the season, we only see one positive outing for Mark Ingram. That's absolutely possible. And there's also an off chance that he doesn't get guaranteed work when he returns. I'm not saying that's probable. I don't think that's probable at all, but it's possible. It's a contract year for him. Running back is fairly replaceable in actual football, and New Orleans is arguably the easiest place for a back to thrive. So even if Ingram comes back and sees a similar workload as he did last year, you're not guaranteed production for a few weeks after rostering him for a full month of him doing nothing. So I think that getting a return on Mark Ingram right now is pretty smart. Add Mike Gillisley and Boston Scott. If you still want to get a piece of New Orleans backfield, and I think that you should want a piece of New Orleans backfield, you could always add Mark Ingram's week one through week four replacement, which looks to be Mike Gillisley, Boston Scott, or a combination of the both. Alvin Kamara is going to see the most carries in that Saints backfield. He's going to see the most looks. But in 2017, he never carried the ball more than 12 times in a single contest. And even when Adrian Peterson left town, Alvin Kamara finished out the year with just a 30.95% rushing share. We're going to see an uptick in volume for Kamara this year, but that doesn't mean that Mike Gillisley or Boston Scott won't see work while Mark Ingram's sidelined. The Saints last year were the 13th most run-heavy team in the league, and in weeks 1 and 2, New Orleans will be heavy favorites against Tampa Bay and Cleveland. A positive game script will mean more rushing, and more rushing means that we might see Mike Gillisley and Boston Scott. The thing is, it's hard to say how this backfield is going to be split. I was telling people to draft Jonathan Williams this offseason. I'll take the L there. That's fine. I was wrong. I was telling people to draft Jonathan Williams, and I do think that Mike Gillisley kind of fills that role nicely. I think that Mike Gillisley has more touchdown upside than Boston Scott does, and I think that Boston Scott is kind of a redundant asset to Alvin Kamara. But overall, I think that both players are decent bench stashes, because if one emerges, he could buy you a few weeks of fantasy production at the start of the season. Add Ricky Seals-Jones. So a popular late-round dart throw of mine this year ended up being Ricky Seals-Jones. He ended his rookie campaign a season ago with the highest yards per reception rate that we've seen from a first-year tight end since 1996. And among all tight ends with 50 or more routes run last year, this is all according to Pro Football Focus, Seals Jones was first in yards per route run. The problem was he wasn't on the field that much. He played more than 30% of Arizona snaps in just two games last year. But this year, things are going to be different. He's played a high percentage of first-team snaps in the preseason, and Arizona's target distribution is fairly flat. You only have David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald as the only proven pass catchers in the offense. There's real opportunity for Ricky Seals-Jones to be a breakout tight end in 2018. Buy Rex Burkhead. A lot of fantasy owners are afraid to invest in the New England backfield. I get it. It's a little bit unpredictable, but I'm not one of them. The Patriots are tied with the Panthers for the most goal line rushes in the league over the last 3 years combined, and as a team, New England's ranked 2nd, 6th, and 4th in running back scoring over this period. The Patriots did draft Sony Michel in April's draft, but he's banged up and he's no lock to play here in week 1. And even if he was going to suit up, fantasy owners should have faith in Rex Burkhead because Rex Burkhead outproduced Deion Lewis when the two backs played significant snaps together last year. During a 5-game stretch where the Patriots featured both Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead, Burkhead averaged nearly 17 PPR points per game while ranking 3rd in the NFL in goal line rushes last year. So sure, Sony Michel's going to steal some work from Rex Burkhead when he's healthy, but Burkhead will still be involved as a receiver. He averaged 4 targets per game in that Deion Lewis split last year, and Julian Edelman is sidelined for the first 4 games of the season, and he's more than likely going to see goal line work as he did a season ago. And that's awesome in an offense that's bound to score points because Tom Brady is their quarterback. I love Rex Burkhead this year. Drop Dez Bryant. I shouldn't have to spend a lot of time on this, but it's crazy because Dez Bryant is rostered in about 40% of ESPN.com leagues right now. That number is really, really high. I understand the allure with Dez Bryant, but if we're going to be objective here, and we should try to be objective, his journey to potential fantasy relevancy will probably be a long one. First, he needs to find a team, and that team also needs to have a starting wide receiver opening. And then that team should ideally have a decent quarterback to enable fantasy production. And then that team should have a simple enough offensive playbook for Dez Bryant to learn within a week. If he was on a roster and he was getting reps throughout the summer with a new team, that would be one thing. But as a free agent with no deal in place, you're far better off holding onto a running back handcuff. You're better off holding mostly anything else. And it's not like he was super productive last year anyway. Add Mike Wallace. So Alshon Jeffrey isn't starting the season on the PUP list, but the bad news is that he's going to be sidelined for at least the first 2 weeks of the season. Nelson Agholor is absolutely going to benefit from his absence, but so is Mike Wallace, and he's sitting on 80% of waiver wires right now. Mike Wallace's skill set does work with Carson Wentz, if Carson Wentz is on the field. Carson Wentz threw it 15-plus yards down the field on nearly 22% of his passes last year, which was 5th most among relevant quarterbacks. And the Eagles as a team ranked 8th within that statistic. And as we know, Mike Wallace beats defenders deep. He's had an average depth of target that's higher than 13 in 6 of his 9 NFL seasons. So Mike Wallace is not only going to see a lot of snaps because Alshon Jeffrey's out, but when Mike Wallace sees a target, it's usually down the field. And that's a recipe for fantasy football success. Sell Ronald Jones. So people might think that this is an obvious transaction because Ronald Jones has carried the ball 28 times for 22 yards in the preseason, but it goes beyond that performance. There's a game theory component to the sell Ronald Jones transaction. If you drafted Ronald Jones, you probably were thinking that at some point this season, he's going to dig into Peyton Barber's workload and become fantasy football relevant in some way. And that might happen, but I don't think it's going to happen quickly because the Bucs start their season off against the Saints, Eagles, and Steelers. Those are 3 teams who are probably going to be strong favorites against a Bucs team that doesn't have Jameis Winston. And given Ronald Jones' struggles in pass protection and the fact that he had a college reception share that was far below average, it's unlikely that Ronald Jones finds himself on the field in negative game script situations. So more than likely, you're not going to get that much from Ronald Jones until at least week 4. And even then, we have absolutely no idea. And it's not like Tampa Bay is some super attractive destination for running backs. The line has struggled in the preseason, and Tampa Bay as a team has ranked in the bottom 7 in fantasy points scored at the running back position in each of the last 2 seasons. So basically, if Ronald Jones happens this year, I think it's going to be late in the season. And since there's a cost in holding onto a player onto your bench who's doing very little, you're better off selling low on Jones right now for a secondary asset who will give you more immediate production. Buy Tyler Lockett. So I wrote this in my article, but just a few years ago, and hold on to your pants when I say this, but a few years ago, there were a lot of comparisons between Tyler Lockett and Antonio Brown. Seriously, you should go Google it. Even though it's not a very good comp, especially here in 2018, it does tell us that Tyler Lockett was once a highly sought-after prospect. In this season, he's going to have plenty of opportunity to showcase his skill. The Seahawks want to run the football and be more balanced offensively, but that might be easier said than done. They've had so many departures on the defensive side of the ball, and they might be trailing more than we think. And on top of this, Seattle's without Paul Richardson and Jimmy Graham this year, who gobbled up more than 31% of the team's targets in 2017. And then there's Doug Baldwin, who's been sidelined with a knee injury and claims to be just 80% to 85% healthy. Who else is there for Russell Wilson to throw to? Brandon Marshall? A 34-year-old Brandon Marshall? Jerron Brown? The Seahawks are going to have to throw the ball more than we think, and Tyler Lockett is the only good, healthy pass catcher that they have right now. I think that Tyler Lockett has wide receiver 2 upside this season. Add Austin Seferian Jenkins. So hopefully you exited your draft with a tight end that you like and you don't have to stream here in week 1. But if you do need to stream, maybe look ASJ's way. Wide receiver Marquise Lee is out for the year with a knee injury, and that should open things up a little bit for Jacksonville's pass catchers. And ASJ might see a little bit more volume than usual in week 1 because the Jags are facing the Giants. The Giants struggled more than any other team against the tight end position last year, allowing the most fantasy points per game to the position. And that has already spilled over into this season because in the preseason, as we saw, David Njoku scored a pair of touchdowns against them earlier this month. I think ASJ is a fine streaming option, though hopefully you have a better option that you drafted. Add Andy Dalton. My favorite quarterback streamer this week is easily Andy Dalton. Dalton's owned in fewer than 20% of ESPN.com leagues, and he's taking on NumberFire's lowest rated secondary, Indianapolis, in a dome. And the Bengals should see a rebound offensively this year after running the fewest plays in football a season ago. They improved their offensive line, Joe Mixon has another year under his belt, and John Ross has finally flashed that big play ability that they drafted him for. I think that the Bengals offense is an offense that you want to buy, but keep in mind that their week 2 opponent, Baltimore, is a matchup that you probably want to avoid with Andy Dalton. Add Tyrod Taylor. So if you can't get Andy Dalton, I don't mind Tyrod Taylor against Pittsburgh. There's been line movement favoring the Browns since the initial 6.5-point open against Pittsburgh, and it makes sense as to why. Cleveland's at home, it's a divisional matchup, and the team's roster is looking a lot better than it did a season ago. Pittsburgh's defense also has a ton of holes, and they have a lot of weakness down the middle of the field. They have bad inside linebackers and safeties. And the Browns have a lot of pieces to exploit that weakness, whether it be with Jarvis Landry, Duke Johnson, or one of my favorite tight ends this week, David Njoku. And when you add in Tyrod Taylor's potential on the ground, he makes for a really good streamer here in week 1. Add the Packers defense. So when finding a defense that you want to stream, you want to look for a team who's playing at home as heavy favorites. That's the start. That's what you want to look for. And you're getting that with Green Bay in week 1 as they're taking on the Bears at Lambeau as 8-point favorites. The Bears will have a new look offense this year, and they're going to be better than what a lot of people probably think. But even still, the Packers should look better on the defensive side of the ball as well. And that's especially true if they're playing in positive game scripts with Aaron Rodgers back and healthy. I think they're a safe option given they're playing at home, even though I do see a rebound for that Bears offense this season. So for the 16th transaction that you cannot get in my column, it's to add Tre'Quan Smith. Now I keep talking about Saints players, but there's a reason for it. Targeting players in good offenses is an easy way to obtain value in fantasy football. Strong offenses score more points, and when there's more points, there's more fantasy points. I know, I'm a genius. Rookie Tre'Quan Smith, though, came through with a really, really nice preseason. He caught 15 of his 17 targets for 189 yards and a score. He was a really productive college prospect who was selected in the 3rd round, and there's not a lot of competition for targets at wide receiver in New Orleans. You have a 33-year-old Ted Ginn, and then there's Cam Meredith, who's coming off a really, really brutal injury. I just think there's a lot of upside with Tre'Quan Smith as a stash. After Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, there's no locked-in third target for the Saints. And not only that, but New Orleans should see some positive regression in the passing department this year, so getting a cheap piece of that passing offense is a pretty good idea. That's it for the first 15 transactions episode, though, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. Remember, you can submit mailbag questions there each and every week. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you on Thursday.